Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everybody.
And University of Rodan political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, all.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. Thank you for joining us, Mr.
Great,
Mayor.
Great to be here, Ian.
Mayor Mitchell, you're opposing an expansion of the number of students attending charter schools in New Bedford. You say the city's traditional public schools cannot afford the loss of more money to charters. How do you respond to people on the other side of the issue who say that there are students who cannot afford to remain in underperforming traditional public schools?
Well, it's a complicated issue that defies a quick summary, but the way that I get at it, Ian, best is that, you know, what we are charged with doing in our public schools is to educate every child, right? So not just the 300 or 400 who are going to charter schools or the few hundred more who might actually be on the waiting list for those charter schools. We're trying to avoid a situation in which resources are devoted to educating a subset of the whole population to the detriment of the vast majority of students and to the detriment of the city's fiscal stability, because when charter schools are established, they impose, for all practical purposes, a significant financial obligation on cities that has to come from somewhere, not just from the school district itself, but also from other city departments, as well as from taxpayers. And, you know, New Bedford, speaking for New Bedford in particular, we are not in a position financially to accommodate that. I mean, the ability to afford new charter schools varies greatly by community across Massachusetts and across America, for that matter, but for New Bedford in particular, it poses a huge constraint on our ability to do all the things that we're expected to do.
Scott, we're no stranger to the charter school debate in Rhode Island. What do you say to those charter school supporters that there needs to be more support for charters, for innovation, and a challenge to the traditional underperformance of public schools that we see in cities here like Providence?
We do see it, but one of the things when charter schools started was they were supposed to be kind of pilot programs, experimental programs, which were to devise and discover new ways of teaching that then could be transferred to the public school system. I don't think anybody really wants to set up another parallel public school system. I think the mayor is correct in that for communities that don't have the resources, that are struggling already to support public schools, that this is a real tough leap.
You know, it's interesting because the governor, Charlie Baker, is a strong supporter of charter schools. But has he made any mention of dealing with your situation by recalibrating the funding formula? Are you looking at something like that?
Well, that's certainly part of the equation, Maureen. And, the reality is that in Massachusetts, the urban schools are not funded nearly enough. We have constrained tax bases, for starters, and many mandated obligations that we have to handle no matter what, ranging from, you know, pension costs to healthcare costs, over which we have little control. And so we've raised the issue of state funding for our schools a number of times. And the reality is that urban districts on a per pupil basis are more expensive because we deal with things like not just kids who are living in poverty, but also influxes of, you know, literally refugees from places like, you know, just to take an immediate example, Puerto Rico in the wake of the hurricane last year. Those dimensions to urban education come with them a real financial cost. So the governor really hasn't attacked that issue, and I think it's going to become an issue in the gubernatorial campaign this year.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about wind power. The state of Massachusetts in May approved a project to be built off the Massachusetts coast by Vineyard Wind. Rhode Island approved a project for Deepwater Wind to build something between the Rhode Island and Massachusetts coast. How will these projects affect you folks in New Bedford? And do you expect that they will lower electricity costs for ratepayers?
Let me tackle the second question first, because I think there's a fairly discrete answer. And the answer there, at least in the case of Vineyard Wind, is it will in the near term raise rates a little bit. But given trends in that industry that we're seeing in Northern Europe, where advances in technology are actually making offshore wind much more efficient, where in the long run, we're likely to see even lower rates. Vineyard Wind came in its bid at 6.4 cents per kilowatt hour, which is a which is a really competitive price and competitive with other sources of electricity, even fossil fuel electricity in Massachusetts. You know, look, in New Bedford, we for a number of years have attempted to position ourselves to become a leader in offshore wind nationally as that industry starts to come over to the United States. Right now, there are some 84 utility-scale wind farms in Northern Europe, and there isn't a single one in the United States. The Block Island project, of course, isn't a utility-scale project, even though it's the first set of windmills in the U.S. But that's all about to change as new wind areas are opened up and down the East Coast. New Bedford's advantage is New Bedford has many advantages, not the least of which is its geographic proximity to these major wind areas south of Martha's Vineyard and south of Rhode Island, for that matter. But also the fact that we are a full-service port, that we've got great infrastructure, and we're, you know, set up programmatically to accommodate the industry. The offshore wind industry is a massive enterprise. It's a massive sector in Northern Europe, and if it plays out here in the U.S. on the East Coast in a way that resembles at all the way that it's played out in Northern Europe, there will be many ports involved. So Provport, for one, but also Quonset, New London, on down the coast all the way to Baltimore and even further south. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting next decade in that space. And I think both New Bedford as well as ports in Rhode Island will be in the middle of it.
Finally, let's talk a little bit about the race for governor in Massachusetts. Mayor Mitchell, you referred to Governor Baker a bit earlier. Governor Baker, obviously a Republican, has won some support and some endorsements from some Democratic officials in Massachusetts. Who are you supporting, and do you think there will be a challenger who will really be able to mount an effective challenge to Governor Baker, who seems pretty popular?
Well, I am a Democrat as much as I am a mayor and try to call balls and strikes as I see them. At the end of the day, I am a Democrat, and when partisan elections come up, presumptively I will support the Democratic nominee, although what I'd like to see, look, at this point, Governor Baker has a commanding lead in the polls. He has tremendous financial backing. His war chest has swelled in the last few years and really dwarfs his potential Democratic opponents. But all that said, what I'd like to see in this campaign, this very truncated campaign, because here we are almost at Labor Day and hardly anybody's talking about it, is a debate on the issues that will affect Massachusetts in the next few years. Things like, as we just discussed, educational funding, things like charter schools, things like offshore wind, just to name a few.
Maureen, we see how Governor Baker typically polls as one of the most popular governors in America. We know Governor Raimondo here in Rhode Island polls not nearly as well. What do you make of that disparity?
Well, one of the things I think about in terms of an analogy with Rhode Island is a few terms ago, we had very popular, moderate Republican governors. We had three terms. We had 12 years. And the reason being was that three times there was a very left progressive person that ran. And that kind of explained why we had this Republican regime, so to speak. And people would say, well, how come, you know, Rhode Island is so Democratic? The issue we have here is when you have people running to the left and they get the nomination, it presents an opportunity for a Republican. I don't see that this time out, but she's got to get through a primary where there is a person who's running who's very far to the left and has a strong constituency. I think once she gets there, she'll be okay.
We're out of time, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at ripr.org.